At National Park Service headquarters, some officials wake up and think about three things: maintenance, maintenance, and maintenance. The Park Service has a backlog equal to the price of an aircraft carrier. Bob Wilbur is chief of the Park Facility Management Division of the National Park Service. I asked him about that backlog.
The Park Service has about almost a $12 billion deferred maintenance backlog across the service, and that includes our transportation assets, which is roads and bridges and tunnels, as well as our non-transportation assets, which are buildings, wastewater systems, water treatment facilities, those sorts of things. And we've been trying to focus on that over the past few years and asking Congress and OMB for money to address that backlog.
I'm not sure people are aware of how many national park facilities the country actually has.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't familiar with exactly how many we've had either. I'm fairly new to the Park Service compared to some folks, only been in there a year. And we actually have 412 park units, and I believe we have 59 that are actual national parks.
And in doing maintenance, how does that normally get done with the money that you do have? That is to say, is it mostly by Park Service staff, or do you have a set of contracts that have contractors do it, or some combination?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. There's a variety of ways we accomplish addressing deferred maintenance in the Park Service. As you know, we get money from the budget office and distribute that money out to the different regions. We have a repair rehab program that prioritizes different repair rehab type projects across the service, and the money that we get for that goes to address those facility projects. We also get money for cyclic maintenance, which deals with our preventive maintenance and our component renewal. And again, that money typically goes out to the regions. And what the regions do there is give it to the parks, and then the Park Service employees use that money to buy materials and provide the labor in order to do those projects. But we also go out to contractors to help supplement our workforce to be able to address some of those needs. For bigger projects, we might go out to an architect engineer firm to have them design the projects. And then oftentimes we'll have those same firms do a design-build-type contract to go ahead and execute the projects. In some instances, we'll take the design from an AE or from Park Service employees and then go out to a construction contractor to do the actual construction of the project. And I said in some cases, but I think in most cases that's really the case. We have civilian construction contractors go and do the actual construction in our parks.
Do you have some kind of a mechanism for ensuring that the money that goes out to the parks gets spent and that the projects are done in accordance with standards or how headquarters hopes they're done?
Well, it depends on the type of money, but the short answer is yes. For instance, in our line item construction projects, we have a design staff at our Denver Service Center with many professional engineers, professional architects, contracting staff, contract inspectors, to make sure that we're getting the quality that we need to in our facilities, and that the designs are up to code and that reviews are being done properly. The regions have similar staff that can do that, and in the cases where they have a gap in that resource, typically what they do is they contract out to architect engineer services to provide that service for us.
And I imagine some of the parks have historic or architecturally significant facilities such that you can't just tear down and put up something, any old type of building.
That's definitely true. In the Park Service, we really make sure that we're doing our work in accordance with the National Historic Preservation Act and similar legislation to make sure that those historical facilities are maintained in a proper manner, you know, for generations to come.
What about volunteers? I know a lot of the parks employ volunteers for a variety of purposes. Do they have any role, or could they have any role in maybe helping out when just on the labor front, if nothing else?
Yeah, volunteers are a huge part of the National Park Service. Getting that labor for free is really great. And, you know, in some instances, they can help out in facilities, maintenance, divisions. More often than not, it's in the interpretive sections and in some of the concessions areas. But volunteers are definitely a big part of the Park Service. Something else I want to add, too, is our youth engagement. We reach out to youth corps across the nation to try to mobilize youth, you know, high school students, college students, our veterans, to come out into the parks to do trail work and painting and maintenance activities. And we've been very successful over the past couple of years in many cases by leveraging those services from youth and the veterans. We're able to execute projects at, you know, half the cost of what it would cost a contractor in some cases. So it's a real advantageous relationship to have those relationships with the youth corps to have them in our parks.
We're speaking with Bob Wilbur. He's chief of the Park Facility Management Division at the Park Service. And I wanted to also ask you about the system for prioritizing what you do with the money that you do have every year. It's never enough. And everyone is calling in and saying, hey, my roof is falling down here. My road is crumbling. With the money you have, how do you set the priorities year by year?
Yeah, that's a great question. Unfortunately, we don't have enough funding to address all the needs across the service. So as you would at your own home, you need to prioritize where that money is going to go to. So what we've set up in the Park Service is a capital investment strategy to put the money towards the greatest need. We have different optimizer bands for our different facility assets, ranging from 1 to 5, 1 being the most important, 5 being the least important. And we funnel our funding towards those facilities in order of priority. Our capital investment strategy has a scoring system that looks at financial sustainability and visitor use and other factors. And based on that score is how we prioritize what projects are funded and what are not, based on the funding level that Congress provides us and the fees that we collect in the parks.
Now, you've got kind of two masters to convince for money. One is the Office of Management and Budget, which adjudicates among all of the requests across the government, and then Congress. And what kind of response do you get at those two levels when you say, hey, look, we're $11.9 billion behind. What can you do this year?
Well, I think Congress and OMB have been very supportive of the National Park Service, especially over the past couple of years, considering some agencies have had their budgets reduced. The National Park Service has actually received additional funding to address our deferred maintenance. And so I think Congress and OMB, as well as the American public, are very supportive of the Park Service in maintaining our facilities.
And as the chief of the management division, what do you spend most of your own time doing?
My time is split amongst our 9 branches. Oftentimes, I'm engaging with our budget office, providing them the data that they need to go back to OMB and Congress to show that we are spending the money as we said we would on our deferred maintenance, on our highest priority assets. Recently, we've been involved with GAO to show them, again, how we're spending our deferred maintenance funding, how we're prioritizing what projects get funded and what aren't, and just kind of informing them on our whole prioritization process and how our project execution mechanisms work.
I'm guessing health and safety of visitors would be a contributor to how high something is on the priority list.
Definitely, definitely. Health and safety issues float to the top using our capital investment strategy algorithm so that those projects get funded very quickly, not only for visitors, but also for our park employees and for the families that we have living in housing in the parks.
Now, you said you've been there a year at the Park Service. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up at the Park Service.
I was actually in the Coast Guard for 26 years prior to moving over to the National Park Service.
And they know something about deferred maintenance there, too.
They sure do. And I had a lot of practice working for the Coast Guard, which, again, is a great organization. I spent almost 20 years of my Coast Guard career working in facility management in a variety of places, from Puerto Rico to Kodiak, Alaska, to the West Coast and Maine. So I got a pretty good cross-section of the different areas of the country, which helped coming over to the Park Service at the national level feel like I have experience in different climates and different areas. I also have a variety of different experiences. I was a facility manager up at the Coast Guard base in Kodiak, Alaska, which was a great experience. So I was also a facility manager at our base that's down in San Juan, Puerto Rico. I did some facility planning for the Coast Guard, as well as some line item or AC&I construction, major construction projects. So all that experience translated pretty well, and is proving definitely helpful here in the Park Service.
Now, getting back to that $11.9 billion backlog, there are some famous projects involved there, and they're all over the country. But let's talk about one close to home here in D.C., and that is Memorial Bridge. In fact, it's in D.C., at least at one end. And what's the status of that whole project? First of all, what's wrong with Memorial Bridge, other than it's collapsing? And what's the plan here?
Unfortunately, Memorial Bridge, it's just deteriorated over time. The bridge has been in place for a long time. It's served the American public well, but it's just had a lot of deferred maintenance that hasn't been completed over the years, primarily due to funding. So now we're in a situation now where we're going to have to we've already reduced the loading on the bridge and limited which trucks can go over the bridge. If we don't do any work, then we're going to have to close the bridge in 2021. So we're doing some smaller projects in order to address the situation. The total price tag for the repair of the bridge is in the mid $200 million range, and we just don't have the funds to be able to do that. But luckily, Congress has been very supportive of what we're trying to do, as well as the Department of Transportation.
And some of them drive over it every day, so that's a good way to get their attention.
Correct. But we've put in for a fast lane grant, and that was recently granted to us, that we're going to receive about $90 million to put towards that effort. So,
and that's Transportation Department money, correct?
That's correct, yes. And that's going to help us get a long way to that $250 million, mid-$200 million level that we're looking for.
So it's not to replace it, but to totally rehab it?
Yeah, we have the approach spans that need to be worked on, and we're going to address those spans first. And then that center bascule span that used to rise like a drawbridge, we're going to be replacing that as kind of the next phase of the project.
Because it has historic, again, one of those things that is historic looking, and so it has to be preserved because of appearance.
Very much so. I think the bridge could be replaced at a lesser cost if we didn't have to comply with the historical requirements of the project. But that's an iconic bridge. It connects the Lincoln Memorial with Arlington Memorial Cemetery. And, you know, we need to keep the historicity of that bridge the way it is. So that's why we're doing things the way we are.
And looking over the list, one of the places that has the highest single figure for deferred maintenance at $604 million is another iconic place in the United States, which is Yellowstone National Park. And what are some of the big issues connected with Yellowstone?
I would say the biggest issue that's facing Yellowstone right now is their transportation systems, their roads, bridges. I don't know if, as I recall, there are some tunnels out in that park. My recollection is the transportation backlog for that is close to $1 billion of work that is needed in the park for the transportation. Oftentimes when visitors are visiting Yellowstone, you know, they'll see a bear, they'll see a moose, they'll see some kind of wildlife, and as a result, there's a traffic jam. We call them a bear jam that backs up traffic. So in a lot of places, what we're looking to do is widen the roadway so that people can pull off to the side so that they can go ahead and take pictures of the wildlife that they're stopping to see, but not stop traffic throughout the park and enable the RVs and the trailers and the motorhomes to get around and get through the park in a timely manner.
Yeah, because you see the pictures of the people. These things are so wildly popular in the 21st century that they do have traffic jams. And then similarly, Yosemite has a $500 million backlog, $555 million. What are some of the top issues that you know about at Yosemite?
Well, that's an interesting question. I was just out in Yosemite last week for the first time. It's a beautiful park. If people haven't been out there, I highly recommend they go see that park.
Maybe in February is a good time, too.
Yes. One of the challenges they have there are traffic jams, not so much because of the wildlife, just because it's relatively close to the Bay Area and even closer to the L.A. area. So it's a good escape for people in those cities that want to go out and get some time in nature. Unfortunately, when you get into the valley, that's where there's a concentration of activities and people. So I know on the weekends there are severe traffic jams there. So what we're looking at is we actually have some buses in place, some hybrid buses that take visitors around the park to try to reduce the traffic congestion there. And what we're looking at is converting some of those buses from hybrid to just all-electric buses to do a more green initiative to get our visitors around the valley and to different areas of the park.
Another one, while we have you, Grand Canyon, $372 million. What's going on there that you know about?
Yeah. A big issue at Grand Canyon is their water line. Their water line was installed, I believe, in the 1960s, so it's that level of technology. And over time, the pipes and the infrastructure of the water system have just deteriorated. So it's probably overdue for replacement. But what's interesting is something I didn't know is that the water for the Grand Canyon facilities on the South Rim the water is provided from the bottom of the canyon. So the water comes out of a cave down in the bottom of the canyon on the north side of the river, of the Colorado River. It's piped across the river over to the south side and then up to the rim. So it's a high-pressure line. It's something like 650 PSI in order to get the water all the way from down in the canyon up into the storage tanks that we have up on the south side of the canyon. It's quite an impressive infrastructure project to see what needs to be done. And some of the materials that are needed definitely have to be flown in and dropped into the canyon. So logistically, it's going to be a challenging project. But that should happen over the next couple of years. It's got a lot of priority here in the Park Service, and that thing's moving forward pretty well.
I guess when you add it all up with water systems and tunnels and bridges and so forth, really, if you add up the totality of what happens in terms of facilities, you've got the equivalent of a major city if you added up all the parks together.
We definitely do, yeah. I think the challenge that we have is all that infrastructure is spread across the lower 48 as well as Puerto Rico, Alaska, Hawaii, and other places. So in some places, it's in an urban setting where the infrastructure is very accessible. In other cases, you're in a very rural or remote area, and there's not a lot of support. And it just makes managing and maintaining that infrastructure a lot more challenging.
And so at headquarters, when you talk about these things, if there was like two or three things that you would absolutely like to get done first, what would those be?
Well, I think our emphasis has been and will continue to be to buy down the deferred maintenance on our most important assets. That's what we've told Congress and the American people that we're going to do, so we're going to do that. And it's having a positive effect. The condition of our high-priority assets are actually improving, and the deferred maintenance for those assets, the rate of growth of the deferred maintenance has slowed, so that's good progress. Another thing that we're focusing on is accessibility. We want to make sure that all of our facilities and our displays are fully accessible. We're a long way from that, but we want to move in that direction, and we plan to make some progress over the next 5 years with some targeted accessibility projects to improve our accessibility in some select parks to kind of showcase what can be done and give parks some guidance and some examples of how to improve accessibility in the park. So we're working on that. Sustainability is another effort, kind of an ongoing effort that we're working across the service to improve, whether it involves renewable energy or energy savings initiatives, making electric vehicles part of our fleets, also providing electric vehicle charging stations so that people that have electric vehicles can not only get to our parks, but then recharge when they get to our parks and then go back to their homes. Even looking forward down the road, I think employee housing is going to be an emphasis here in the coming years. The focus has been facilities that have a visitor use tie, and we are making progress in that regard, but I think we need to also focus on our employee housing, because we need to take care of our people so that they can take care of the visitors.
Bob Wilbur is chief of the Park Facility Management Division at the National Park Service. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.